All right, we're looking at an article this morning from the Gospel Coalition, which is normally a very good site for from articles and references. I was on the site yesterday, got a great article on Old Testament and afterlife in the Old Testament. So it's a good site for Christians to know about. This one's from Joe Carter, which is a routine contributor, and the date is February 10th. Mike, why'd you choose this article?
If I'd have seen it back 2 weeks ago, I would have done it right there at the Super Bowl time, but I missed it somehow. To me, within the world of sports, gambling is just a normal, whether it's from buddies together on a game, whether it's March Madness in a pool, or whether it's going golfing and you're playing skins and holes and things like that. As Christians, I think it's an area of our life that we need to be making sure that we're in sync with God on how we bet and gamble or do or don't. And so I just thought it's an article we should talk through.
Okay, great. Brian?
So, what just happened? The American Gaming Association forecast 1 in 5, so 20% American adults will place a bet on this weekend's Super Bowl game between Philadelphia and Kansas City. A record 50.4 million American adults plan to bet, wagering a total of $16 billion. This estimate includes legal bets, those placed with illegal bookies, and those casually made among friends or relatives. The total amount expected to be wagered this year is more than double the amount from last year. So what is sports betting? Technically, sports betting refers to any wager between two or more people made on the outcome of a sports event. But in the last decade, the term has primarily referred to the facilitation of sports wagers through corporations known as sportsbooks. Prior to 2018, the only state in the U.S. where a person could legally wager on the results of a sporting event was Nevada. For most Americans, sports betting was limited to wagers between individuals or bets placed illegally with a bookie. But the Supreme Court ruled in the 2018 case, Murphy v. National NCAA, that a federal ban on sports betting was unconstitutional. Commercial gambling remains illegal unless granted a special exemption by state governments. But as the moral opposition to gambling has decreased, states have increasingly been willing to grant such exemptions. Since that Supreme Court decision in 2018, almost every state legislature has legalized sports betting or introduced a bill to do so. Advertising for sports books such as Caesars, DraftKings, and FanDuel has also increased exponentially in states that allow sports betting. In 2021, U.S. Sportsbook, including tribal-run companies, generated $4.29 billion in combined revenue. So which states have legalized sports betting? Well, the states that have legalized sports betting are Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Mississippi, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Tennessee, Virginia, Washington, West Virginia, and Wyoming and Washington, D.C. has also made it legal. North Carolina has limited sports betting via tribal casinos, and New Mexico and Wisconsin, some tribes now offer sports betting under the existing Class 3 gaming compact. Mississippi allows sports betting, but only on site at licensed casinos. Maine, Nebraska, and Massachusetts have passed bills to legalize sports betting, and new laws may take effect by the end of the year.
All right. What is the concern? All right, what is the concern with sports betting? A frequent concern expressed about sports betting is that it encourages predatory gambling and leads to increase in problem gambling. Predatory gambling is the practice of using gambling to prey on human weakness for profit. It differs from social gambling in that it leads to higher rates of addiction and gambling losses, promotes organized crime, promotes vices that are sanctioned and protected by the state, such as abuse of alcohol or marijuana. The legalization of predatory gambling leads to increases in problem gambling within the population. Problem gambling or compulsive gambling is the overwhelming urge to keep gambling despite the toll it takes on your life. For instance, the casino industry, a major source of predatory gambling within the U.S., attracts a disproportionate share of low-income workers, retirees, minorities, and people with disabilities. The poor are often the targets of predatory gambling in all forms and the most susceptible to do it. Do we need to keep reading, or is that enough to address the issue, Mike? What do you think?
No, I think that's good enough there.
Yeah.
The one quote further on that just follows up with what you just finished, it does talk about, you know, as with the lottery, many states are rushing to normalize storybooks because it provides additional forms of tax revenue. And to connect that thought, you know, I've always looked at the lottery as a lower socioeconomic tax, being that, you know, the lower socioeconomically gamble through the lottery in such a higher percentage than those of middle income and upper income.
All right, so there is a segment of our church, not our church in particular, I wouldn't say, but the evangelical church or even the larger church in that, that would say there's nothing wrong with betting. There's nothing wrong with gambling. Taking your disposable income and messing around with it. What's the difference between me, you and I, Mike, wagering $20 over a game and I lose the 20 and you gain the 20 and me spending $20 on crab legs when I don't need crab legs, I only need peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Or you spending $20 on an overpriced shirt that you could get at Walmart for $7 and you went and got the brand name and you spent $50 on an unnecessary expense. So what is your retort to that idea, Mike?
And I think for a lot of our listening audience, you know, Larry Burkett, you know, former passed away Christian financial expert, you know, that was his position, that as long as it was within your disposable income, then he felt like it was a freedom, a liberty in Christ. For me, I can see where they're coming from with that, and I can't necessarily argue against that from the standpoint of right or wrong. But yet, from the idea of a stumbling block, and can this increase, will this grow, and can it become a danger with your family, then I think we need to be much more cautious than just giving it a blanket, as long as it's disposable income, then it's okay.
Because I don't think anyone, you know, to use your two examples, no one's like, man, I'm now so addicted to crab legs, I gotta have them every night. Like, there's no one who's going to, with their disposable income, go that direction. Same with the shirt. Oh, I gotta go buy another shirt. I don't think that there's that addictive property to some of the other uses of disposable income, in as would be with betting. My concern with the sports betting thing is, and I've never gambled, but at least with trying to rent. Yeah, my siblings were born in Las Vegas, so maybe I was the gamble. But you know, at least in my mind, if you go to a casino and you take out a tangible amount of money and you trade it in for a tangible amount of chips, and you actually have this in front of you. But sports betting, we're going into this digital world in which currency can move without us ever actually feeling like we've lost anything. And especially in the form of it being games, we know what gaming culture is like video game culture is like within our society. So if it gets to the point where you can literally place money on almost anything, and it's done through your digital device and you're not actually losing chips, or you're not the one who had to take the money from the ATM to do so, or swipe your credit card, and you kind of made that conscious effort where they're watching, you know, and there's at least that hesitation of, oh, they saw me buy more chips already. Like, I think there's some hesitation that might happen at an actual casino versus a digital betting where there is no perception of accountability, or at least, hey, no one sees what I'm doing because it's all digital.
So you have a greater concern from that
perspective? I have a greater concern about it going digital. That I think the problem gambling, as it's being referred to, I think that's going to increase, because I can waste my time, I can waste my money, and before you know it, it's gone.
So this is a stewardship issue?
I'd say
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
I think there's also a wisdom issue. If you tend to have a personality that whatever you find that's your interest, that you go and spend too much time with it, regardless of what it is, if you just dive into whatever your current hobby is, I think you very much should be extra cautious on, okay, am I going to become addicted to whatever my behavior is?
Right, and I would agree, Brian. I mean, yes, it's a stewardship issue, and we could say that about a lot of other things where we use disposable cash to on things that are frivolous or irrelevant to what we should be spending it on as well. But, you know, I think as Christians we need to strive to avoid anything that has the potential of becoming abusive or addictive. You know, and gambling would fall in the same as alcohol. You know, does the scripture say, you know, you can't drink a beer? No, but, you know, what's the probability that if you start that you're going to get addicted and want more and more, and it leads you down a path that you didn't want to go on? And gambling would fall right in that same category.
How do we answer this
which would fall in with overeating, and, you know, if you like the crab legs and you get addicted to them, or high fructose treats and sugar, whatever, you know, and we could go that with anywhere. You know, we could take any scenario. You know, I know people that are way overweight, and it's because they love fast food. You know, and they just eat out all the time. You know, and a lot of that's because their economic status is such that's what they can afford, and that's what they buy and eat. You know, they don't want to buy, you know, go to the grocery store, buy food, take it home and fix it, so they just do what's convenient, you know, and buy fast food. But, you know, that becomes an addiction as well.
How do we answer this response? The soldiers at the crucifixion, many would use the word gambled in casting lots over Jesus' garment, but yet the disciples also cast lots at particular times, one being to replace Judas. So how do we answer?
Well, I would say in the Old Testament, it was normal to cast lots to discern the will of God.
But I think we have to differentiate
as opposed to gambling
between casting lots and playing dice. You know, the mechanism might be very similar, but yet, you know, when you're casting lots, especially Old Testament, it was always for an understanding, for a wisdom about an issue. It wasn't like you got snake eyes or boxcars or whatever.
Hey, Mike, I think there's a personal testimony here that needs to be shared.
surely you've watched enough, you know.
I knew snake eyes. Time, like, I knew it was
snake eyes, but I don't know boxcars. You
know, is that double sixes or something like that?
I don't know.
But
now you're trying to backtrack.
So back to the story.
Let's see your sports betting account.
But I think there's, you know, when you would do that, and then, like you said, to replace Judas, it was just a one-time casting of the dice, so to speak, and then they said, okay, the Holy Spirit guided us, here you go. Versus over and over again for multiple pieces of clothing or for, you know, multiple pieces of money.
So what are we saying with regard to sports gambling? Are we saying that it's off limits, or are we saying that it's really potentially problematic? What are we saying with sports gambling?
I think when we have the conversation within the community, the community around us, we need to be having a conversation that this is a greater burden on those within the lower socioeconomic of our society. And are we being good and helpful when we're allowing this more and more easily, just like with the lottery? We at least need to have that conversation and be aware that often the reason this gets approved is because it's another tax stream.
It's another revenue stream of the government. Yes, yeah. So most of the time, the reason this is being presented and approved and implemented is because it's just another way for the government to get money.
Yes.
Just like marijuana, just like cigarettes, just like alcohol tax. just another way for the government to, and the persons that preys upon the most are the ones that I'm supposed to love the most. I'm supposed to love my neighbor, and this is a neighbor that I have that struggles financially.
Yeah. So as a Christian citizen, we need to be elevating that to the conversation at every time we get an opportunity. That's the first level I think we should address here. I think the second level we can go to it is admitting that gambling is not prohibitive within Scripture. It's not the 11th commandment. And so we need to be honest about that and start from that point and then challenge people to figure out, where is God convicting you? Where does God have your heart?
So how would I? How could I possibly rationalize, Mike, $20 that I'm going to be willing to lose to a gamble, right? And not giving that $20 to a cause. How could I, as a Christian, how could you reasonably rationalize, I'm willing to lose $50. Josh and I are going to bet $50 on Kansas City and the Philadelphia Eagles. Either one of us is willing to lose this $50 bill. And how could either one of us, as true followers of Christ, not say, no, Josh, we shouldn't do this. If each of us are willing to lose $50 over a sports game, we should give this $50 to organization X, Y, or Z that's feeding the poor, advancing the cause of Christ, clothing the hungry, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, what?
The rationalization is that you'll get his 50, so now you'll have 100, and you could do more with that.
Or we could both pool our resources,
right? But,
and give.
Right, but in that scenario, I think the detriment there is one of, you know, as Christian brothers, one of you is going to lose. You both can't win. So one of you is going to gain from the loss of another, a brother in Christ.
Which is, I think, the direction of the article. But the rationalization is not that. The rationalization is this. When you two sit down and watch that football game together, and you, as guys, we have that natural sense of competition within us, the fellowship, air quotes, the community that you're having, because it's a little bit of a higher stakes, because I've got some skin in the game now. Now it's, oh, I'm going to be, you know, talking smack to Josh the whole night, and we're going to have even more fun because now we've kind of increased the stakes of this recreation.
Okay, so
that's the direction I think in the Christian community this will go. I don't think there's going to be a lot of individuals out there arguing over the fact that I have, you know, that I'm dealing with my sports betting in my own world. It's going to be the, okay, hey everyone, we're going to put together the pool for March Madness is right around the corner. Okay, you want to fill out a bracket, it's $5 to enter, and then the winner, you know, winner gets it all. And it's not done in the name of, I'm willing to sacrifice my $5 being in hopes that I get Josh's $5. It's in the name of, we're going to be spending time talking, and we all enjoy basketball, and we're going to continue fellowshipping and having fun through this. And, oh, by the way, if my bracket doesn't get busted, I might actually walk out with some cash.
So, like in the article, when it said social gambling, that would be the title and what,
right,
I'm thinking about, as you just explained.
Right, and what I would say is I would want to challenge Christians who enjoy that to go ahead and take it a step further. Make it a God-glorifying thing by saying the proceeds are going to organization X, Y, or Z. So Josh, if I lose, then you pick where the money's going. If I win, I'll pick where the money's going. But in both cases, it's not going to benefit us. It's going to benefit somebody else. And somebody that advances the cause of Christ, feeds the poor, clothes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's the way that you could enjoy the camaraderie that we're talking about and know that what we're doing is like above board. It's above reproach. We both have money that we're willing to give up, and this is how we're going to choose to give it up, and we get to enjoy the game. Does anyone have any objections to that thought?
I think you just described a raffle, a fundraiser. You walk in, hey, would you, $20 for a ticket, and you know, the proceeds are going to this, and you know that on the front end, but you also know, hey, I might win an iPad out of this.
But in my case, I'm not winning anything. So that we're clear, other than the bragging rights of you were wrong, my Kansas City Chiefs won, even though they got into it based on a penalty. They shouldn't have even been in the Super Bowl. And
I would separate the what you said, Pastor, and raffling, and that can be a discussion.
Because I think the concept of a raffle like that would fall under the umbrella of betting.
I don't disagree that it falls under the category of betting. My challenge with doing raffling when you're a church, if that's where we're going to go with this, is that we don't need to depend on gaining people's money through those kind of avenues.
Well, I wouldn't go that direction. My understanding of the conversation is we're trying to better equip our church members on what do I participate in myself. Right. How have I worked through the ethical dilemmas that are sitting in front of me? Do I participate? You know what, the guys at the office are gonna do the pool for March Madness. Oh hey, you know what, we're gonna do a raffle together to try to serve this or whatever the case might be. Or someone comes to me and says,
"Okay, so let's take that scenario. That's a very reasonable scenario." All right. Let's say that the organization, that the platoon, the squad, the company, the car salesman at your Buick dealership are going to do that, right?
Yeah.
That I could put my $5 or $10 in, as long as I understood that if I won, right, I'm going to take the money and I'm going to give it away. Now, I can't make that upon everybody else. In other words, all of us in this room, bunch of mechanics working in a shop. You might not go that way, Brian. You might be thinking, I want to win this thing and I'm going to put a Christmas money for my kids, okay? And I'm going to take $10 of my disposable income this week. It's not going to impact diapers. It's not going to impact gas. It's money that I would spend on Mountain Dews or lunch. Instead, I'm going to spend it this $10, right? The only way I think that I could rationalize that, rationalize is not the right word, think through it as a Christian, is if I said to myself, I made a commitment, and I might even get an accountability buddy on this, just so that I, a little accountability. Yes. I might say to Mike, who's my daily guy that I chat with scriptures, Mike, I'm going to go into this thing, and if I happen to win, I'm giving the money towards organization X, Y, or Z. If they win, whatever they do with that $10, that's their business. I'm only doing this to build relationships with guys at work. I want to be able to speak in their lives, and part of being able to speak in their lives is having a relationship with them. And so I want to be able to interact with them. I don't want, we're called to be salt and light, all right? Let's make sure we understand this. But that doesn't mean that I'm the biggest oddball at the organization and nobody even thinks I'm normal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. They can't relate to you.
Right, exactly. And if they can't relate to me, Josh, then how in the world am I going to get to speak in their lives? Mm-hmm. I went to Ranger School. I went to Jump Master School. I went to Air Assault School. I did those things so that I had credibility as a non-commissioned officer to speak into your life. I passed the PT test. I exceeded passing the PT test. I maxed the PT test so that you looked at me as a leader in the organization, and then I could speak into your life when there was an opportunity to have salt and light. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say this is a very similar thing. I go to a Christmas party. I don't drink when I'm at that Christmas party, but I go to the Christmas party, even though I'm not going to enjoy myself, but I'm there to potentially...
relationship. Yes. And so I love that avenue of thinking. I'm open to that however I can be a normal person, we should be trying to be normal people and build relationships with people. If it's a black and white scripture issue, okay, then we need to be set apart. But if it's not a black and white biblical issue, then we should be loving people and interacting with them.
Well, I think the awareness is just as important, because we might have members of the body of the corporate church who are not going to drive 3 hours to go to a casino. Right? They're just not going to do it. But if they can get on their phone and in 10 seconds place a bet on a game, well, now that's a little different scenario here. And they're maybe willing to do that, and then that can open that door, like what you were talking about, Dr. Wilson, about going down that path they don't want to.
Yeah, and we need to be really, I'm thinking about a 19-year-old right now that is just addicted beyond measure, and it's just destroying his life, and he's losing this and this and this and this. So this is really problematic. I don't want anyone to hear us saying, that we somehow are putting a tacit approval on this. I don't drink any alcohol whatsoever. It's not because I believe that there's a mandate. It's because I've seen the degree to which alcohol destroys lives. My mom's life, my siblings' lives. Nearly every single Article 15 that I was involved in as a senior NCO, alcohol was either directly or indirectly involved. I mean, just very, very seldom do sober people, completely sober people, do really stupid things. I mean, sure, it happens, but alcohol is often a direct or indirect cause because it lowers inhibitions, causes us to lose our normal cognitive ability to say this is wrong and I shouldn't be calling soldier X, A, Y, and et cetera, et cetera. It's a real problem in our society.
And I think that goes back to then what Brian was talking about. When it becomes electronic, it's so much more dangerous.
Well, same thing with the advancement of pornography on the iPhone. Now that you can just grab your phone and get iPhone. You used to have, you know, when I was a kid, you had to find the magazines. They were under Uncle Bob's bed, and you had to go find them in the attic and look for them. And all that was a conscious decision. They were behind lock and key. They were hidden or whatever. Now, man, your 14-year-old, your 11-year-old can be in his bedroom with his iPad masturbating to pornography and you not know about it as a mom or a dad. I mean, that's the new reality, and we have to live our Christian world in this new reality. We have to talk about this new reality.
And that can be found on an accidental Google.
Yes.
To where a young person isn't even trying to go that direction, but yet they Google a topic and a site pops up, and then it starts.
Yeah, and then it becomes game on. I can't tell you the number of young men who've told me that their exposure to pornography was at a buddy's house. They spent the night at a buddy's house, 12, 11, 12, 13 years old. Who, you know, instead of them going over to their house, have them come to your house, mom and dad. Because you have a lot more control, you know. Yes. When you send your 9-year-old to somebody's house to spend the night, you really need to know whose house you're going to. The neighbor across the street that you see in passing and wave at may not be the best choice. You know, we really need to be a lot more discerning as to who gets the privilege of influencing my young person.
Pastor, going back to the gambling and the sports betting, and you talked about accountability, for those of our listeners that are married, I think this is definitely a couple's issue to talk through and to figure out where do they stand on it together, and then definitely access to each other's phones with apps so that people can keep each other accountable with that. If you're not married, then who are you going to be accountable to, and who do you talk back and forth with items like this? Do you have, you know, microgroup friends? Do you have a small group that you can bounce this off of and talk back and forth? It's helpful to have relationship when you need to work through issues like this and developing a game plan like you asked us a few moments ago.
I think along with that, the parents have to make, because there's so many things that we do with our kids nowadays that parents have to realize that some of the just small things that they do with their kids could suggest that gambling is okay. So, like, play the way that you play certain games at home, like, oh, I could get mine and yours, or different things like that. It could suggest that when I get older, oh, this is just the adult version. It's okay because we did this as kids. The same thing. So you even have to be a little conscious about what you're doing with your kids.
Sure, and we do this all the time in a very casual way. I bet you $5 I can do that. I bet you $5 you won't do that. You know, and I certainly am not suggesting that we just eliminate all of that from our vocabulary, because it's part of the awareness or the funness of life. Funness is probably not a word, but.
We learned Sunday, though, that that's how dictionaries are made.
That's right.
Make up words, and then you add them to your dictionary.
And then you add them to the thing. But I have to know what I have a propensity to go. I have to know Where are my weaknesses? What is potentially problematic in my life? And if I see that I'm anywhere on a glide path towards anything, man, I got to be able to stop it. I mean, I've got to recognize I don't want to go down this road. I need to stop this dead in its tracks before it gets out of control.
And Brian talked about it. He didn't say addictive behavior, but yet that's what he was talking to, that some people are more naturally wired to have addictive behavior no matter what it is. They get something, a new hobby, and they are whole hog in and doing it all the time and spending extra money on it. And then they get this next one, and it's the same exact thing over again. And if that's the way you are, you need to be very guarded to that. And you need to have accountability, whether it's your spouse or another friend, to help keep you in check with that addictive behavior.
I mean, my only other thing, I strive to live by the stumbling block rule. You know, and that's, you know, I might be, you know, again, I might not have a propensity for something, and I know I can dabble in it and it doesn't bother me at all. But I also know if someone's looking at me as a mature believer, as a pastor, and they're going, oh, well, he did that, so I can do it too. But then they do have a propensity for that. And then all of a sudden, you know, the next thing it's, well, I did what he did, and look what happened to me.
Yeah.
And I know I can't answer for all of them, and I'm not responsible for their actions per se, but still, I'm going to strive to live in such a way that I'm not leading anyone astray.
Yes.
And that's part of loving your neighbor. That's the application of loving your neighbor. And that, you know, I mean, this is hard. Let's just own it to the fact that this is hard. This level of following Christ, this level of living out our Christianity in such a way that we all are salt and light, that we are seeking to influence people in a very positive way, in a Christ-exalting way, in a way that is for their own good, their own betterment. You know, the reality is, Mike, most people don't have disposable income to waste on this.
Well, that's a whole other conversation when we look at the average, how much money people spend a week or a month versus how much money comes in. Most people are spending more than's coming in.
Right. So if you're spending more than's coming in, then you have no business doing any wagers.
Yeah.
If you are not saving, you have no business doing any wagers. If you're not giving to your church, your local church, some portion of your income, you have no business.
There's no disposable.
Right.
You're not there yet.
Right. You're just simply not there yet. You know, and people want to get there before their time is, you know. And part of getting to the point where you have disposable income is hard work. I mean, just lots of hard work, you know. My whole time in the military, my entire time in the military, Josh, 20 years, I would tell you we had very, very little disposable income. Very, very little disposable income. I mean, just many paychecks, no disposable income. It was all committed. All of it was committed. Just haircuts, eating, gas, tithing, paying the bills, saving a little bit. No disposable income whatsoever. But we have all kinds of people living as though they have disposable income, but they actually don't. They actually don't have disposable income. This is a stewardship issue. You should know how much you bring in, how much you spend, and where it goes. This is this idea, God bless me with more, and you're not even managing what you have well. And nobody wants to hear that, but that's the hard, cold facts. Take a look at how you're managing your finances and see if you actually even have disposable income. If you don't, then you don't need to be eating crab legs. You don't need to be wasting your money on alcohol. You certainly don't need to be buying any tobacco products. You don't need any high energy drinks. I mean, these are things. Starbucks is off limits to you because you're paying way more for something than you should. I mean, there are lots of ways that we spend money, you know. I bought a Subaru. Okay, let me just be all honest with anyone. I wanted a BMW. Okay, that's the truth. I wanted a BMW, but I got a Subaru. I could rationalize a Subaru as a stewardship issue, okay? I kept on looking at the numbers on the BMW, And I just couldn't get there. The maintenance, the depreciation, everything was going to be more expensive. I mean, it's just the reality. We've got to be good stewards. And gambling in nearly all cases is never a good steward. Any other thoughts anyone has to add to the conversation?
I'm going to ask Paul off the microphone. Does that mean my kids can't go to Chuck E. Cheese anymore?
Mm-hmm. Off the microphone. All right, thanks for listening. Have a good day.